You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Saturday, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LONBA, and you can get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So as we chat on this Saturday, we're in the midst of a break as far as Rockets preseason activity. They're now 2-0 after wins earlier this week against Oklahoma City and the Shanghai Sharks. That puts the Rockets currently on pace to go 103-0, 5-0 in the preseason, 82-0 in the regular season, and 16-0 in the playoffs. I think we can safely say that's probably not going to happen. But on pace, I will roll with it anyway. And nonetheless, there are a lot of positives to take out of a 2-0 start. They have looked very ready, starting with the leadership of Chris Paul and James Harden at the top. And if you want my thoughts on those two games, certainly you can check out our Locked On Rockets archives and our post-game shows after Tuesday and Thursday nights. But for now, we're in the middle of kind of a four-day break, in which the last game was Thursday night in Houston, and they don't play again until Monday night in New York. That's also going to be a live stream game, rockets.com/live, or the Rockets' official Facebook page, facebook.com/rockets. And, of course, we'll be talking more basketball after that game on our show here. So, for now, the Rockets, they had their fan fest Saturday, but by and large, they're taking a few days to sort of rest their bodies. They are having practices, of course, Saturdays, as I said, being the open practice, but they're doing a few other things. James Harden, we saw him at game two of the Astros series yesterday. Thankfully, the Astros are now up 2-0 in their best of five series against the Boston Red Sox, the division series in Major League Baseball's playoffs for the American League. So there's a lot of things going on. So we're going to be talking basketball a lot over the next few months, but since we have this four-day hiatus, I figured this was a good time, especially over the weekend, to talk about some bigger picture things. Now, the news of the day yesterday, Tillman Fertitta was officially approved by the NBA's Board of Governors as the owner. That's great news. It's nice the Rockets have this dropped up before the regular season. I'm not going to go too much in depth on that today because the press conference is going to be Tuesday. That's when those of us in the media get to actually meet with and ask questions to Tillman for the first time. So stay tuned. Tuesday we'll have a lot more on the Tillman Fertitta front when he has that press conference now that he's officially the owner of the Houston Rockets and no longer Les Alexander. What I'm going to do today, and I've been wanting to do this for a few days, was basically break down the results of this week's NBA GM survey. And if you're not aware of that, you can Google NBA GM survey. It'll come up on one of your, on Google News or whatever your search engine that you use is. Or you can just go to NBA.com/GM survey/2017. But what it is, all of the GMs around the league are surveyed on a number of topics, everything from projected standings to questions about individual players, coaches, arenas, things of that nature, to get their thoughts going into a season. Now, of course, the GMs are allowed to be anonymous because no one wants to go on the record saying what their evaluation of their player is for a whole litany of reasons. But it does give you a pretty good handle on what the league thinks of teams, players, et cetera, going into a season. And it's certainly not infallible. I'll point out last year, the 2016 survey, the Rockets were seen as the eighth best team in the Western Conference. They were a top three team. So yes, you can overcome the odds. However, this is not Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless. These are not guys just going out there throwing hot takes to try and put contrarian views out there and get you to click or listen or share or whatever it may be. These are guys that are paid to do it for a living. So while you can overcome a negative opinion in the eyes of GMs, more often than not, I think they're going to be right. And so generally, you want to be on the side of those GMs, the guys who spend their entire lives evaluating basketball. You want them to have your team held in high regard because more often than not every time, but more often than not, they're generally going to be accurate. And so it's fun for me. There are a lot of interesting questions that the GMs get asked, and I'm going to break down the Houston responses today, but I'm going to start with just a very high-level overview. One thing that you see a lot is, boy, you go through all of the responses to these questions. Houston is mentioned 20 times. If you do a Control-F, find, search, you can see Houston referenced 20 times. That's how many times a Houston player or coach is either mentioned or is either in the top three of the voting or in the honorable mention. and say you compare that to a nondescript team. I'm just going to go with the Indiana Pacers, for example, a very blah team that doesn't have a lot going for them at this point in time. They're mentioned once. So that's a good comparison that you see Houston mentioned 20 freaking times. Even Golden State, as good as they are, they're not that much more than that. Golden State, of course, is the favorite on the list as far as tops of the West, tops of the league, that sort of thing. But Houston's 20 nominations, yeah, that's close to as good as it gets in the NBA. And even Oklahoma City, after a tremendous offseason, they're not any more than where Houston at in terms of their Houston is at in terms of their 20 nominations. So Houston's getting a lot of respect from the GMs, but what I'm going to lead with, the most important thing, is to rank the top four teams in the Western Conference. And I want to point out that this survey was conducted after the Carmelo Anthony trade. This has been done within the past week. So all of this includes the entire offseason. And yes, I have seen all the hot take artists on Twitter that are saying that Oklahoma City is past Houston, blah, blah, blah. And of course, a lot of it's just the shiny new toy syndrome. The Carmelo trade was the most recent. Now they have three stars, even if one of them is just a star in name only. A lot of folks look at the game strictly through a prism of how many names are household names, who do I recognize? And there's been a lot of discussion saying, okay, Oklahoma City, have they passed Houston? Have they passed San Antonio? And if you ask the actual GMs, the answer, no. Houston is projected as the number two team in the West behind Golden State. 45% for Houston, 38% for San Antonio, 17% for Oklahoma City. What I think is actually really telling is that 90% of the GMs have Houston either second or third in the West, whereas only 51% of GMs have the Thunder as a top three team in the West. So basically 90 to 50 in terms of are the Rockets or the Thunder a top five team, or top four team, excuse me. I think that's a pretty high and significant split with regards to how GMs around the league see these two teams. And again, that's after the Carmelo Anthony trade, and it's not like they're down on the Oklahoma City acquisitions. Actually, one thing that surprised me a little bit, and I'll talk about the individual player rankings later, but the GMs by a long shot said that Paul George to Oklahoma City was the most impactful move of the offseason, even ahead of Chris Paul to Houston. So it's not a matter of the GMs not respecting the move that Oklahoma City made. It's not a matter of this survey was taken before Carmelo Anthony. No, it's about looking at the totality of the evidence, the totality of the teams. And the biggest reason why I see Houston as ahead of Oklahoma City is because Oklahoma City just had so far to go. Last year, of course, they lost 7 of 9 head-to-head meetings, including 4 of 5 in the playoffs. But beyond that, there was 8 games of separation between these two teams in the regular season. And if you look at the Pythagorean numbers, this is something that was pointed out to me by Kelly Scaletta, a good friend of mine that writes for FanRag, Bleacher Report, etc. The Pythagorean numbers actually suggest it was closer to 12 games separation between Houston and Oklahoma City based on expected point differential. It's just Oklahoma City in the regular season outperformed their expected numbers by a few games because Russell Westbrook was so incredibly historically great in the final minutes of close games, particularly against weak competition. So Oklahoma City had a great offseason. Have they had a great enough offseason to where they have overcome 8 to 12 games of separation between themselves and the Rockets, and even more than that, between themselves and the Spurs, particularly when you consider that the Rockets also had a great offseason, adding Chris Paul, P.J. Tucker, Tarik Black, Luke Bamute, et cetera, et cetera. To me, I don't see any player on that list making up that, at least on a comparative basis, making up that caliber of deficit. And I know what's being said out there by folks like Stephen A. Smith. I'm not oblivious to it. I just generally ignore it because you have to keep in mind those guys are basically paid to be contrarians. They are paid to get clicks. They are paid to have hot takes. They put their stuff out there because it's going to get shared. They are looking for the flavor of the day, and they're looking to push your buttons. And if they do that, then they succeed. So I understand that it's out there, but I'm not really giving it that much credence because to me, I don't see much in terms of how I look at these two basketball teams that suggest there's been something to overturn 8 to 12 games worth of difference. And it's good to see that I'm not alone. The NBA GMs see it the same way, because 90% Houston in the top three versus just 51% for Oklahoma City. That's a pretty big gap in the eyes of NBA GMs, the guys who are paid the biggest bucks to get it right when it comes to building winning professional basketball teams. Now, I'm going to break down the rest of the Houston nominations in just a second, but for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at SeatGeek, because without them, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do. And, well, when we're talking about great teams like the Rockets are projected to be in the eyes of the GMs, or the Astros, as I was saying earlier, can't have a, even though it's a Rockets podcast, you can't go anywhere in Houston these days without talking about the Astros, who are 5 wins away from a World Series and 9 wins away from a World Series championship. So if you want to get in for the Rockets, you want to get in for the Astros playoff run, and you haven't used your LONBA promo code for yet, I don't know what you're waiting for, because, folks, it's a great time to be a Houston sports fan. Have you mentioned the Texans, who have Deshaun Watson going great for them, Sunday Night Football against the Chiefs. And yeah, SeatGeek, they've got so many amazing benefits. It's a great app. You can buy and sell tickets. Literally 2 taps of your finger. They cross-compare websites. They grade every ticket from 1 to 100, so you know you're getting the best deals, the best bang for your buck. But the best part, as my loyal listeners here at Locked On Rockets, I've got an exclusive for you. All you have to do is enter the promo code LONBA, and you can get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So if you're a Houston sports fan and you want to take in live a lot of what we're talking about, all these exciting things going on around town, folks, this is the time to do it. And yeah, it's as easy as using that promo code, and that's $20 free. Just download the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com, go to the settings tab or page, and then click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LONBA. From there, that will take $20 off of your price, and that should help a lot, whether it be Rockets tickets, Astros playoff tickets, Texans, or even concerts. It's all applicable. Just use that LONBA promo code, and our partners at SeatGeek will save you $20, and it's just so easy. So again, SeatGeek.com, SeatGeek mobile app, LONBA promo code, and well, you can save a lot of money in a hurry. So jumping back into the GM survey, I wanted to lead off with the team breakdown of the Rockets being second in the West in the eyes of the GMs, and substantially ahead of Oklahoma City. The gap is closer between Houston and San Antonio, and I would agree with that, even though San Antonio just did not have the sexy offseason like Oklahoma City did. Part of why I fear San Antonio is just simply because of their professionalism. As I've said this week in my recaps of the 2 preseason games thus far, the one thing that stands out to me above everything else in the eyes of the GMs is, in the games, and I think it's reflected in the eyes of the GMs, is the professionalism of teams like the Rockets. And of course the Spurs have that as well in spades. When you look at someone like Greg Popovich leading the way, Kawhi Leonard, and all the types of respected veterans they have there. But over 82 games, it's not just about having the most talent on a given night. It's also about respecting the game, showing up day in, day out. And that's where teams like Houston and San Antonio that have been there, done that, have respected leaders like Chris Paul and James Harden in Houston, to me, have a leg up on these young up-and-coming teams like Oklahoma City, like Minnesota, where there's a lot to be proven from the standpoint of, okay, are these guys that are in place, can they truly lead a team that's going to win 55-plus games day in, day out in the NBA? Because, yeah, there's a lot of talent, but getting through 82 games is about more than talent. It's about mental strength, desire, and that's why even though the Spurs did not have a sexy offseason, I honestly see them as the third seed behind the Rockets rather than the Thunder or Minnesota, because that professionalism, especially over the course of 82 games in the regular season, is going to mean a lot. And when you look at the NBA GM survey, listing Golden State, then Houston, then San Antonio, then Oklahoma City, I think that speaks to that as well. So I want to lead off with the team breakdown, because it's all about the team. It what matters, yes, we get excited about individuals, but at the end of the day, it's about winning basketball games. And when the GMs, the decision makers around the league, see your team as the second best in the Western Conference, yeah, that's a real, real positive when it comes to how you can expect your team to perform. Now, again, it's not infallible. There are mistakes. The Rockets were picked 8th last year and finished 3rd. So, yes, you still got to go prove it on the court. At the end of the day, these are just projections. You've got to win. But more times than not, the GMs are going to get it right. And so I'd rather be, in general, on the side of a team that the GMs respect rather than a team on the other end of that spectrum. Anyway, leading first with the team, but now jumping into the players. Best point guard and shooting guard in the NBA, James Harden, easily at the top of the shooting guard list, even though he's technically, the Rockets would say, co-point guard along with Chris Paul. But Harden with 83% of the vote, that's up from 57% last year. And, of course, he should have been higher than that last year, but that was coming off 41-41 and all the narratives. But, yeah, 83% is absolutely commanding. Kind of laughed at the shooting guard breakdown, because Klay Thompson was second with 10%. And then also receiving votes, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. I'm not sure who the hell considers either of those two guys shooting guards, but maybe you had some guys that were just reaching for a contrarian vote. I don't know what happened there. But the bottom line, James Harden, 83 percent. That's a commanding list, and yeah, there's nobody on that list. Well, I mean, if you really want to stretch it, I guess you can say Kawhi Leonard would have a case, but folks, Kawhi Leonard is not a shooting guard. Come on now. But best point guard, this encouraged me. I think they got that right. First off, Stephen Curry was the runaway number one, and I agree with that, far ahead of Russell Westbrook. I don't care what the numbers show. There's no way that you can look at Golden State and Oklahoma City play basketball on a regular basis and think that Russell Westbrook's style of play, in my opinion, is more conducive to winning. I just don't think that that many people truly believe that. I know what the numbers are, but Stephen Curry has shown a much greater ability to put up numbers and to execute within the framework of a contender. And yes, I know that he has Kevin Durant alongside him now, but even before that, I've seen a lot more from Stephen Curry as the lead option of a number one team to put him in that high ranking, as opposed to Russell Westbrook, who, despite all the exploits last year, well, folks, being a 45-win team and losing four games to one in the first round, that's not something that has me saying All-NBA, MVP, anything of that sort. But the interesting thing from a Rockets perspective, who's best point guard in the NBA? Third on the list is Chris Paul. Now, I know his percentage is low, 7%, but what's interesting is it's not so much about the percentage for me as it is the number. Because when you're at third in the NBA, again, Chris Paul, my contention all along is that a lot of casual NBA fans, and that's what drives discussion on Twitter, underrate how brilliant he still is because he's been around for so long. He's 32 years old now. He hasn't been on the big stage lately for a lot of reasons, primarily the Clippers' injuries. And so there's a tendency for some of the younger, and again, I'll go back to that shiny new toy analogy, John Wall, Kyrie Irving, so many young point guards in this league, and they tend to get, a lot of times, mentioned before Chris Paul, just either because of the new factor, because they've been on the stage in terms of a deeper playoff round more recently. There's all sorts of reasons. It doesn't mean that Chris Paul's declined. And you can see that in the eyes of the GMs, the only guys they pick out of him are Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook. And I think that's important because that's part of why, in my opinion, you do have people around the league. And when I say people around the league, I shouldn't say people around the league. I'll say fans around the league underselling just how impactful that Chris Paul acquisition was by the Rockets, because, yeah, he's a top 10 player in the league, hands down, in my opinion, and I think the rankings we saw earlier this summer by the scouts showed that. It's just there's a little bit of a disconnect in the eyes of a lot of the more casual fans or more casual media members, and so that's why sometimes you don't see the Rockets getting the respect, in my opinion, that is that's due, and the important thing, they are getting that respect in the eyes of guys like the GMs, but maybe some of the more casual rankings are a little more down in the Rockets, and to me, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that, I've explained before, but the GMs, not just the team, but from a, but from an individual ranking standpoint, they seem to get it. Now, going down the rest of the list, what team made the best overall moves this offseason? Houston is top five on that list. They gave Oklahoma City the lead. I guess you can say they acquired two stars, even if either is to the level of Chris Paul, and they aren't, then they acquired two stars. I'll give them the edge on that, but Houston's still top five. That's a lot of respect. Which one player acquisition will make the most impact? This is the one that surprised me a little bit, and I teased to this earlier. Chris Paul is third at 10%, which I think is dramatically underselling, but Paul George is number one at 59%. Carmelo did not receive any votes in this category. Other guys were Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, Paul Millsap, and re-signing Kevin Durant. I'm not sure why that counts as a player acquisition, but whatever. But that's where I get into the high degree of separation between Houston and Oklahoma City, because you have this huge split between the Rockets being projected second, the Thunder fourth, 90% of the Rockets is a top three team, only 50% having the Thunder is that, yet Paul George is overwhelmingly seen as being the most impactful acquisition, even over Chris Paul. Now, personally, I don't believe that to be accurate. However, the fact that the Rockets are so far ahead of the Thunder in this survey, even with a panel that seems to be that much in favor of Paul George, should show you the high degree of separation between these two teams in terms of the overall depth and quality of the rosters. That even if you think that Paul George is a bigger impact than Chris Paul, and then even if you add Carmelo Anthony on top of it, that it's still not enough to outweigh a Rockets team, what they already had, a 55-win team from a year ago that largely is intact. Now, they let a few spare parts go in the move for Chris Paul, but really none other than Pat Beverley. And, of course, you upgrade Pat Beverly to Chris Paul in terms of the foundation of your team outside of Bev, and you have an immediate upgrade there. It's pretty much all intact from a 55-win group from a year ago, and you've also added Tucker, Bob Mute, Tarik Black, et cetera, et cetera. So again, to have Paul George that high and to have Houston still ahead of Oklahoma City in the eyes of these same voters should show you just how great this overall roster is. Now, going down further the list, most underrated player acquisition, PJ Tucker got some votes on that. I could definitely see that being a very real thing. PJ, you could see, but one thing that was interesting to me, and I commented on this after the Shanghai game. The Shanghai game, PJ wasn't bad, it just wasn't his game. The Shanghai game, because they were so outmatched, the Rockets won by 62. It was more up and down, it was more playmaking. And PJ, he did start at the four in place of Ryan Anderson, who was out Thursday with a bruised hip, but it wasn't really his game, because that was just getting out and running. It wasn't really the half-court style, which is where his style of physical play and defense thrives in. Flip side, that first game against Carmelo Anthony, against Paul George, those great forwards in Oklahoma City, that's where PJ Tucker made a big impact. Now, he also played a few minutes at the center. That was when both Nene and Tarik Black were out. But PJ Tucker, he's going to shine, in my opinion, when the Rockets actually struggled the most last year, which is when teams are able to slow them down. We know last year one of the stories was, okay, if a team like the Spurs grinds it out, how do the Rockets overcome that, a team that wants to play with that much pace? Well, they're better equipped to do that. First, because you have Chris Paul directing the offense, that instantly makes you a much better half-court execution team. But then defensively, to have someone like PJ Tucker with that level of savvy, I think that's a very underrated pickup. I'm glad other GMs, at least one GM, sees that, because to me, not only is PJ a good defensive player, but he helps in an area the Rockets were very, very weak in, not just in terms of defense, but in terms of situational half-court play. And even through two preseason games, I think we've already seen that this week. Most surprising move of the offseason. Allergies have been getting me a little bit this week. Chris Paul to Houston, ranked third, 14%. That probably gets back into the idea of two point guards. A lot of folks had said that Chris would either take the money in LA or what they thought was the better team in San Antonio, but he chose Houston, and there's some reasons for that. I will get to that in just a moment in the back half of the survey. But now we're getting into more of the coaching things. Which head coach runs the best offense? Mike D'Antoni. Ranked second, 24%. Only guy ahead of him is Steve Kerr at 59% in Golden State. Not going to complain about that. Those are 1A and 1B when it comes to Golden State and Houston. I'd like Mike D'Antoni to be number one since he's done it for a longer time in the NBA. Truth be told, you can't complain when the guy that leads Golden State is getting that much respect. It is what it is. But here's where I want to discuss Chris Paul. And this has actually even gone up from last year. Which active player will make the best head coach someday? Chris Paul leads the way at 39%, and that's actually up from 28% a year ago. And then a couple other Chris Paul notes. Which player is the best leader? He's second in that at 21%, behind only LeBron James. And which player has the best basketball IQ? He's second in that, 14%, only behind LeBron James. So what you see with all of these, and how we'll even throw who is the best passer, because Chris Paul is second in that, Harden is third with 7%. But when you see all these attributes about Chris Paul from a leadership and coaching standpoint, who's going to be the best coach one day? Who's the best leader? All these, who's the best, even passer, because of course that ties into distribution overall, being a floor general, that sort of thing. All of these go back to one thing, and I've said it before. It's the heavy-handed, in-your-face coaching style that Chris Paul is known as a player. He is as in-your-face, as hands-on as it gets with his leadership style. And I think that's good for the Rockets, because certainly it's a little bit of a contrast with James Harden. I think both of those guys kind of make up for the others. I don't know if weakness is a right word, because I don't know if you can necessarily say it's a weakness, but you might, if there are any questions about one, then the other two seems to have a good balance for it. So I think certainly that speaks to why Chris Paul and James Harden might work well together, but also what I think it speaks to. So you look at all of these, you look at these criteria such as high basketball IQ, being a coach one day, leadership, it goes back into what I've been saying all along about Chris Paul, not just this season, but his entire career trajectory and going forward in Houston. Folks, the decision he made to come to Houston, yeah, he's under contract for 1 year because that was what was easiest to facilitate the trade before free agency, which also got you P.J. Tucker, helped you keep Nene with the exception, et cetera, by virtue of being an over-the-cap team. But even though Chris is a free agent after the year, folks, Chris Paul, his decision was a long-term decision because for him, he is as hands-on as it gets. It's not just about one particular team. For Chris, his vision is literally being an extension of the coach. He runs the show. He runs the organization. We even saw it Thursday night after a game against the Shanghai Sharks when almost everybody was taking a victory lap. He was going on and on in the locker room, and I posted a lot of the tweets on my Twitter about how important it was for Clint Capela to continue improving defensively, to get more vocal, to be the anchor of the defense. That's what Chris Paul is. That's what he does. It's not just about one particular player, although having James Harden certainly helped. It's not just about one particular team. For Chris, it's about putting his footprint on everything to do with an organization. You may as well think of him in the same way that you do a head coach. And so when you think about a head coach or a GM picking a team, they're not just picking a team based on what the roster is now. They're picking a team based on the potential, how they fit in with the organization, the key players, all the way up and down, and we can throw all the way up to the GM, the president, and the owner in there. So Chris Paul, you have a player with that level of IQ, that level of coaching savvy. He picked the Rockets because he thinks from a structural standpoint that they are where he has the best chance to win. And truth be told, I don't see how you can make an argument for any other team other than Golden State. And we're not counting Golden State because there's no real path for him to go there. Other than Golden State, I'm not sure you can make an argument that any other team is well-positioned over the next 5 years is as well-positioned as Houston is. So Chris Paul, all these things go back to the fact that this is not just a hired gun that's looking for one shot to win a championship is going to move on. No, Chris Paul is as deep and thoughtful as it gets. For Chris Paul, it's about finding a home where he can put these traits on display. And he's decided that Houston is the right place for him, and that's why, in my opinion, short of things going catastrophically wrong, I don't see much chance at all that he's going to want to move on to go anywhere else. I mean, first off, I don't see there being anywhere else that would really be a better chance to win anyway. But beyond that, all the things that define Chris Paul, his leadership, his coaching abilities, all that sort of stuff, that's about more than just a team around him. That's a culture. That's an organization. And when a guy like that makes a decision, it's pretty unlikely, in my opinion, that that within 12 months you're going to want to see him, barring some extraordinary circumstance, change his mind and decide something else it is a better fit. In my opinion, and it always has been this way, the one-year contract is just a technicality based on what was best for the Rockets and Chris Paul to facilitate the trade prior to free agency at the time. It's not a symbol of his commitment or lack thereof at all. Final notes of the GM survey, what team is the most fun to watch? Houston is second behind Golden State in that. Again, the Rockets are a lot of fun to watch. Not going to blame you if you say Golden State is more fun to watch because, yeah, it's an incredible team. The other things, though, I've talked a lot about Chris Paul in terms of these individual accolades, the leadership. I didn't even mention the toughness, but of course that goes with it. Chris Paul did get some votes in terms of being the toughest player. So did P.J. Tucker, and that's something the Rockets could use, especially in those grinded out settings that we were discussing earlier. I think that speaks to Chris Paul. I have not discussed that much the aspects that James Harden was voted for, and that it's easy to talk about Chris Paul because he's new, and I don't want to say that we take James Harden for granted, but to some small extent, maybe we do. However, James got a lot of respect. He's fourth in saying who will win the MVP behind just LeBron, Durant, and Leonard. I think James should be higher than Kawhi, but it's 11% versus 7. Let's not quibble over that. And as I've always said, you can't get bothered when you have LeBron and Durant as 1 and 2 in any order for a certain award because those are the alpha dogs of a generation to start a year. No complaints with that. They do have Harden ahead of Westbrook and Curry, which I thought was interesting. But the things that James seemed to get a lot of respect, James is actually third in the league in which player forces opposing coaches to make the most adjustments. Last year, he did not get any votes in this category. So again, who makes opposing coaches make the most adjustments? Third in the list, ahead of Russell Westbrook, ahead of Kevin Durant, even ahead of Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green. The only guys behind him are LeBron, because of course, and Stephen Curry, who simply because of his shooting range, you can understand why that's a very unique adjustment that you have to be prepared for. But yeah, Harden driving Mike D'Antoni's system last year, I think a lot of teams, especially early on in the year, and that had to do with the Rockets getting off to a 31-9 start, even and a 62-win pace, even without a second All-Star in place. I think it caught a lot of teams off guard, just how great that system was with James Harden running it. And now, of course, James Harden has Chris Paul to co-run it, which should even make him more efficient. But yeah, to see LeBron and Curry as the only guys ahead of Harden on the making the most adjustments list a year after Harden did not receive any votes at all in that category. Yeah, I think that speaks to people that watch film and actually prepare game plans around the league. Yeah, they've noticed, and that's given a lot of credence. You know, if you want to make Harden-Westbrook comparisons, and again, I've always said, this is why I think the GM survey is a big deal. This is not the media landscape in which you have all these silly narratives and all the things we've talked about before. This is where the proof is in the pudding. These are guys that are evaluated to make tough basketball decisions. And so, yeah, if you want a comparison of Harden and Westbrook, Harden's ahead of Westbrook in the MVP, in the MVP expectations. He's ahead of Westbrook in terms of the making adjustments, actually doubled him up in terms of the percentage of votes. Houston's well ahead of Oklahoma City in the standings. So yeah, the media members, there's a lot of narrative stuff. That's silly. The GMs, again, they're not infallible, but generally they're not going to fall into the same hot take mentality. So when you see Harden ahead of Westbrook on these lists, then yeah, despite what Westbrook got in terms of media accolades last year, I think the people who actually run the decisions and understand basketball at a higher level, it seems they're partial to James in terms of that one-on-one comparison. Did mention that he was voted as the best shooting guard. A couple of other things, though, that did stand out. As I mentioned earlier, Harden was third on the list as far as which player is the best passer behind only LeBron James and Chris Paul. That's pretty phenomenal for a guy who some questioned, is this even a point guard a year ago, as silly as that sounds. He's come along very far in that. And then he's also on there, which player has the best basketball IQ? Now, again, LeBron James, Chris Paul, 1-2, and that is certainly a credit to Chris, as I said earlier. But James is one of only six players in the league, LeBron, Paul, Stephen Curry, Marc Gasol, James, and John Wall, that got votes. So, again, I think we have shattered the narrative of anything about James being selfish. I can't say there'll never be a fan out there, because there's lots of stupid people on Twitter who say stupid things. But in terms of people around the league, real decision makers, see Harden top three in terms of best passer, getting top six in terms of best basketball IQ. Yeah, I think we pretty much shined on the narrative of, oh, can James Harden play point guard? How is he as a facilitator? Folks, he is more than fine. He's really freaking good. And so I think it's good to see James Harden. Even after just technically 1 year, and then they should have known more because, of course, James has been inactive. I don't know if he's been an active point guard, but he's certainly been an active facilitator for more than 1 year. But yeah, last year was his first year with that technical point guard title, and will he technically have that title this year? I don't know. We'll see how they do the various awards. But yeah, he's getting his respect. Even it was silly, but this time last year, there were a lot of questions. In 1 year, those seem to have been answered, and James Harden is in a much, much better place when it comes to his perception by these GMs. Again, last year, as obvious as it should have been, coming off, even though the Rockets were 41-41, it was a phenomenal season for James individually in 2015-2016. He only had 57% of the vote as far as best shooting guard, and that should have been obvious. But yeah, that's up to 83% this year. And to see James perceived that highly, not just, of course, in that shooting guard ranking, of course, because now he's more than a shooting guard, but then all the way down the list, adjustments, passing, IQ, that speaks to his rising perception around the league. And if you want to be optimistic, if you're a Rockets fan, if the GM see him that way, odds are pretty high that a lot of the players see him the same way too. And that perception, because of course Chris Paul is up there as well, for so many of these, it's LeBron James, Chris Paul, 1A, 1B, then yeah, you have James Harden and Chris Paul, and that puts you in a really advantageous spot to recruit from going forward in terms of next free agency and trade deadlines, any sort of situation like that, as evidenced by Carmelo Anthony wanting Houston or bust. Now, I know Houston did not get Carmelo Anthony, but as we've discussed a million times, that had to do with what Houston was not willing to give up in a trade because they didn't think Carmelo was worth it. If the player was worth it, yes, Daryl Morey would have given up better assets and a deal could have happened. So Carmelo was the name on the top of the list this summer. It didn't happen for a lot of reasons, but it's not the only name. There are going to be more names as we get closer to the trade deadline, and especially next summer. And so when you have Chris Paul and James Harden respected this well amongst the primary decision makers of the league, then yeah, it puts you in a really good spot to potentially lure further stars to them in the months and years ahead. Final one that I should throw out there, which bench player makes the biggest impact? Eric Gordon second on the list, only Andre Iguodala ahead. I have no problem with that. I know Gordon actually narrowly beat Iguodala for sixth man of the year last year, but Iguodala, obviously a great defensive player. Eric, tremendous offensively. It's 1A, 1B from that regard. And when you consider that Iguodala has made an impact on a championship team in Golden State, I'm not going to lose any sleep over disrespect because Iguodala gets a slight edge, 41% to 24 over Gordon in terms of most impactful bench guy. Bottom line is, Gordon, whether he's one or two, he's about as influential a sub as there is in the NBA. And that's why, and of course, as I've mentioned on the recaps of this preseason, he's been at a literally an all-star level in terms of his efficiency so far in the preseason, reminiscent of what he first 40 games last year when he averaged over 40% shooting from three, almost 18 points per game. That's incredible production off the bench, as good as it gets, really. And so you combine that with Chris Paul and James Harden and potentially have all three of those guys out there to close out games. And yeah, it makes you a really, really feared basketball team. And Phillips, if you needed any reassuring as to why the Rockets did not give up Eric Gordon and Trevor Ariza in a deal for Carmelo Anthony, this is it. That just, I said it now, I said it then, and I'm more convinced now, it just would not have made you a better basketball team. It's that simple. Eric Gordon, when he's healthy, is a really, really, really good NBA player. Players and GMs and everyone around the league understands that. Only question there is, you know, how do you make sure that you keep him at his freshest, at his most healthy? And as far as I'm concerned, adding another star guard to reduce his burden in terms of playmaking, even reduce his minutes if needed. And the Rockets did that by bringing in Chris Paul. That gives you the best shot to keep the best version of Eric Gordon going for hopefully the entire year. So with that said, I will wrap it there. Again, those are just my preliminary thoughts on all the Rockets mentions. There's 20 in total. So yeah, we've had to go for a while because there's a lot of Rockets mentions in the GM survey. And as I said, leading off, that's surely a good thing because folks, the GMs, they know what they're doing. And if you see the Rockets mentioned 20 times, it's because they're a pretty feared team with a lot of quality playmakers, a lot of quality players. And, you know, for a comparison, I threw out earlier, you can Google search any of the team name or Control F search any of the team names on there. And earlier, I decided to check Indiana because that comes off to me as just a fairly nondescript blah franchise right now. Indiana's mentioned once, and that's in the context of where they were ranked a year ago in the projected Eastern standings. Not even mentioned at all this year, as opposed to the Rockets, who are mentioned almost 20 times. Actually, more than 20 when you include the references to last year. So, yeah, the Rockets, the GMs know there's something special going on here, and by extension of that, so do the players, everyone else around the NBA. And so I think that shows you the expectations for this season are justified. GMs expect them to be the second-best team in the West, and probably by extension of that, second-best team in the NBA, because I think everyone sees the flaws in Cleveland, who is projected as the best team in the East. So, yeah, if you're the second-best team in the West to the Warriors, you have a right to have high expectations. The GMs see you that way. That's the way I see the Rockets as well. So as we enter the regular season, now just a week and a half away from opening up on Tuesday the 17th at Golden State, the defending champs on ring night. Folks, there's a lot of optimism and reason to be excited about this season if you're a Rockets fan. So with that positive note out of the way, I will wrap it right there. As always, thanks to you guys, my loyal listeners, for listening. If you're not already following the show or me on Twitter, please do so at LockedOnRockets or at Ben Dubose. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, if you've got questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a sponsor, just as our friends at SeatGeek were today. Remember, download that SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LONBA, and you can get a $20 rebate off of your next purchase from SeatGeek. So, going forward, we are going to be back to more day-in, day-out basketball in the days ahead. Rockets resume preseason Monday night against the Knicks. That's going to be streamed, rockets.com/live or facebook.com/rockets. You can watch that game, and we'll be talking about that afterward right here on Locked On Rockets. And then Tuesday is the press conference for now official new owner Tillman Fertitta, Houston billionaire. So we'll get to talk to him about what his plans are for the team. I think, as I said leading off, I think it's great that the Rockets are able to wrap that deal before the regular season. Don't have any transition while games are being played. Let's get all of this, all of the questions, everything out of the way well before the regular season opener on the 17th. So yeah, Monday and Tuesday, we'll be back to our normal shows talking more day-in, day-out basketball. But now that we're in the midst of a four-day break, that's why I thought this would be a good opportunity. Take a step back, talk some bigger picture stuff. GM survey is always fascinating to me because that's not Stephen A. Smith. That's not Skip Bayless. That's not the silly media narratives of MVP. These are the guys who are making the decisions around the NBA, and they're not infallible. They're not perfect. by and large, they're pretty good at what they do. So if they like your team and they like your players, which they clearly do in the case of the Rockets this year, again, www.nba.com/GM survey/2017, I think you should feel pretty good about where you're at as a franchise. And, well, I completely agree with that when it comes to where the Rockets are as they enter this 2017-2018 season. So on that very, hopefully, positive ending note, go out and enjoy your weekend. Hopefully the Astros wrap things up in Game 3 tomorrow, that's Sunday, and then we'll be talking more basketball Monday night when the Rockets get back in action against the New York Knicks, who will not have Carmelo Anthony. So, yeah, we'll be talking more basketball Monday, but for now, folks, enjoy your weekends.